Hi everyone, welcome back to another episode of Reload Podcast. My name is Lee Maxwell and joining me as usual are
Nigel Lamont
and Connor McCann.
This is episode 109, previous episode obviously 108 because that's how numbers work. I was not on the previous episode, but I'm back.
Back.
Back again.
Getting some stabby work done.
I was.
Yes.
So it's still a little bit dry and itchy, but other than that,
happy.
All good.
Happy with the work.
Oh, delighted.
What about the tattoo?
Nice stop at you. So, bit of chat today, probably a little bit of dubshed chat because it's coming close.
Yeah, not panicking at all.
No,
no,
none of us are. No. I'm not going to have a car there, so to be fair, I'm not that bad.
It's all chilly.
Yeah. And then I have a topic for us later on, so we'll get to that. But we'll start off with what's new with everybody. So, Nigel, what's new with you?
Mark 1 Golf. Absolutely nothing has happened since because, hey, Dubshed is really cool.
You were so proud of yourself the last time that you were like, I did stuff.
Did stuff. So, yeah.
You were having bother getting the radiator hose flange, weren't you, off the thermostat housing?
Yeah.
Yeah? You still haven't bothered that? I suppose you haven't really looked.
I haven't looked.
Well, allow me to be your knight in shining armour.
Excellent.
Would that be the uber rare part that you're looking for, sir?
This is just like Christmas. This is fantastic.
And in standard fashion, I found that in the boot of the Bora.
Ugh. Connor.
Because where else do you keep your rare Mark 1 parts?
I'm welling up right now.
Is that what you need?
Awesome. Perfect. That is exactly what I need. How is that so complete? Mine is completely crapped.
I got that off Stefan for when I was going to build a 13 small block because I wanted the aluminium housing so that I could cut these off and weld up the flanges and smooth it all so it'd run no heater hoses.
And guys, that sums up the car community.
Ah, there you go. So...
big warm fuzzy feelings all
share
around.
And share alike.
If I owe Stefan for that, you now owe him, but I don't think I do.
I do not want to be in debt to the Free Presbyterian Mafia.
Everyone's in debt to him, so it's alright. He's fucking wild. Somebody's going to recall his debts. He's going to be rolling the money and just bankrupt everyone.
Yeah.
So what else?
When JP Morgan calls up the debts.
Yeah, the fucking 2018 or 2008 recession all over again. So nothing happening?
Nothing further than Mark 1, no. The last time I was chatting about cars, what was I talking about? The Q5, remember, fixed the speed sensor?
Yeah.
So that was cool. The other side went.
Oh, of course it did.
And it went properly. It's thrown into limp mode every so often.
Oh, shit, right.
The light seems to be staying on more and more. So get another speed sensor order and get that fitted.
Nice.
And he was telling me it just happens. They just go randomly. Just
and
the fact
just
that they've went 3 weeks apart just sucks.
Yeah.
So get that fixed, hopefully. News on the all-in-one package from VW for the Club Sport. Finally, I have got it reinstated.
Happy days.
Got this phone call from this random dude just going, how you doing? It's VW Finance. Just start by apologising. So apparently I sent my forms back twice trying to set up the direct debit, you know, get it reinstated. And apparently they sent my paperwork off to another customer, they've discovered. Only took them 6 months to find this out.
Nice.
And they were apologetic, got that set up. They had my bank details, so that's it. And he says, we won't be charging you for your arrears. And I says, yeah.
You fucking won't.
Definitely right, we won't. And as an apology, we won't be charging for the remainder of the term.
Happy days.
So I've got three more.
Oh, I love it.
Looked into Philips for, I think, a week after Dubshed for a service and the pesky light fault. And it's the week or two after Dubshed. Got that sorted. So then while I was looking into the paperwork of the Club Sport, I realised, hey, MOT's up in June. Do you know what MOT is, Connor? No.
No.
So I went on to the fantastic MOT booking system.
Don't.
I couldn't believe it. It used to be you clicked down, you know, you went through the process, entered all your details, you clicked MOT Centre, and then it gave you available dates.
I seen this in your story the other day.
And every single MOT.
None available.
What's that about? It used to be it was 4 or 5 months in advance. Now it's just none available.
Yeah, I've had the same issue. I was trying to rebook for the Jetta because I had it booked and obviously I'm not going to make the date I had booked. So I was trying to rebook a new date. None available. Sat and hit refresh. You only get half an hour on the, and then it times you out and you have to re-log back in. I think I did 3 half-hour sessions of literally hit and refresh. Constantly. Occasionally, tomorrow would pop up in like some obscure Downpatrick or somewhere. But mostly either months out or tomorrow or just nothing.
Yeah.
And similarly, the Superb was due, and I've had it back since December probably, and it was due the other day there, and I got an engine management light, and I was like, oh goody.
Yeah.
So brought it to Motorfix because it happened to be in Dublin.
Shout out Motorfix.
Shout out Motorfix. Plugged it in, a few fault codes, nothing too urgent, but it does, a couple of things do need fixing. It's due for service soon anyway, so I'll get it all done in one hit. Turn the light off, pray that it wouldn't come back on. But I was still trying to look to see if it does feel, and I do need to rebook it, because I have to have my car fully road legal for work. Yeah. There's none of this, oh, the PS and I'll let it slide or whatever. I'm not insured on the company insurance unless it's all fully legit. So panicking again, trying to look and see, could I get a date for a couple of weeks when I had time to get it down and get the work done to it? No. But luckily, took it through there on Thursday and it did pass. So thank fuck for that, because that would have been a nightmare.
Yeah, it's just comical.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely comical. Force of the minute. The system is completely broken, and it started with Rampgate, I think it was 2020 during COVID.
Yeah.
And then there was an inquiry by Nicola Mallon. She was the minister at the time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That rolled on.
But the South had the same issue with their ramps as well.
Yeah.
And their system seems to be in the similar shambles, because Paul was telling me as well.
And then this just rolled on. There seems to be problems with it. And then this last couple of weeks, it was brought up again and how ridiculous it was. And the head of the department or whatever came out and says, oh, there's simply more cars on the road. We're actively employing more staff. Every year they say they're actively employing more staff.
It doesn't make any difference though when there's not enough centres.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, the latest minister, I don't know who he is.
Fuck knows.
I forget what you call him, but he's been saying, oh, we're looking into options. You know, just sort it.
Aye.
Just sort it.
The need to privatise it, put it to the guard, is the way the English system is. Sell off the MOT centres and stop paying a load of half-trained mechanics big money to do fuck all.
The problem is...
It's a controversial statement.
The problem is, I think when this happened the first time in the ramp, the privatisation thing, I think it earns them 40 million a year.
Aye, that's the problem.
Here's a caveat. Is it a caveat? Or a cherry on top, whatever you want to call it, to my MOT woes. They've put the price up to 38 quid now.
Yeah.
Instead of 31.50.
Not even. Mm-hmm. I don't even...
So we'll provide a poor flipping service and we'll charge you more.
Yep.
31.50, because it's been... It was 30.50 and 31.50 for 15 years.
Where'd they get the jump from?
So see, up to 38, I'm not so worried about. Retest, 29.50.
You're having a lie.
Get fucked. I was like, used to be 18 quid.
Mm-hmm. I remember cheaper than that.
So your man has said there's more cars on the road, which means there's more business. They're making more money and they're charging more.
Yep.
Yeah.
More.
No one's sure.
How do you like it?
Tell you what it is, Stephen.
What fucking dick.
Hello, this is Roger from Malayla.
I think Stephen's going to be busy with other things over the next couple of weeks.
Just
like Jeffrey.
Something picking off in the news, isn't it?
If you know, you know.
Mm-hmm. I think the MOT wait lines might be the biggest priority.
No, definitely not.
The corridors at par at the minute. Everybody's checking their WhatsApp messages.
Is it checking their kids? Good old Northern Ireland politics.
Allegedly
indeed.
By the way, no offence to anyone we know who works in an MOT centre.
Are you backtracking now, eh?
We jokesies.
Yeah, I know two that work on it, so.
They're probably the decent ones.
All two of them.
What are you saying? Are you saying they're like traffic wardens, Lee?
Everyone hates them.
Just reverse you back down this cul-de-sac a bit more.
Traffic wardens. You done?
Yeah.
Just a bit more on the Jetta. Not much to report other than still continuing to take more parts off. So it's pretty much a rolling shell now.
Excellent.
The two front seats and the dash are still in. But they'll be coming out tomorrow, and then it will pretty much be a rolling shell. So all the glass is out, the screens are out. Did you see the big lumps of silicone that I pulled out of the rear? Yeah. Don't.
It's ironic considering silicone's supposed to be waterproof.
Yeah.
Just
delightful.
Mental.
Aye, so what, like the bottom corners of the back window were basically made up of silicone?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
That's a nice touch.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, that's about it for me.
Connor, I think you might have something to talk about.
Here we go. So I'll try and keep this as short and sweet as possible. Welcome to my hell, folks. Dubshed looms. Fuck this time next week. I'll be having a nervous breakdown.
No, you won't. Dubshed's on.
Because it'll either be there or it won't. So.
Oh, no, at some point, Dubshed does this. You know the crack. Sorry, Nigel, you'll be having a nervous breakdown.
I'd be lying in the corner, rocking back and forth.
Just the norm.
Yeah.
What time is it? Is it mid-afternoon?
Half three.
Half three? Fuck me, is it half three already? Yeah. The day will nearly be over, folks. Well, indeed. So anyway, I may or may not have a golf there. This is what I've been doing. The last time, since the last recorded, that weekend, then I was extending the wiring loom when I was here. Took that finished up, and thankfully that Saturday or Sunday night it fired up, which was good because Stephen and Lee were sitting in the house and they could hear it starting in the house because there's new downpipes on it. So that was good. Then I got the fuel lines ripped out and replaced them as well. Got a genuine feed and a non-genuine return, so I was happy to get them done up. And then I remade the fuel filter mount because the one that was made on it before was absolute dog shit, so I made that and repositioned it and put riv nuts in the floor and sealed them all up properly. Sorted all the wiring and behind the dash then once it was all extended. I then got on to mounting the O2J shifter tower, which is a Mark IV Golf shifter and cables out to it. So there's a frame sits under the original shifter of the Mark II in the tunnel, and you basically trim most of that away, leave the back end of it, offer up the tower, and then mark through the two back holes, and then put riv nuts in. You can bolt it up properly in the front end, open up the shifter tower box, pull the two studs out of the front of it, put longer ones in, offer it up, smack it with a hammer, marks the floor, drill your two holes, seal them up, fucking nut or nut in the inside of it, and that was it. You have to trim, there's a wee fucking bell crank on the side of it for getting first gear. You have to trim like three mil of sheet metal away in the opening. That's it. It's perfect. So that was a couple hours, but it was nice to get it done properly. Windscreen is in, which was good.
Shout out to Paul from Motorfix.
Yep. Sorted me out with a windscreen. Steph and I put it in, and something I was dreading, because when we put it in the other time for Matt, it was a fucking nightmare. And this time it was just me and Stefan, and it seemed to go really well.
But I had to pick it up in Dublin, and as soon as Paul set it into the car and closed the door, he was like, "It's your problem now." Good luck shitting myself driving the way home.
So once I got that in, that was last Saturday, then I put the dash in, and thanks to your advice, I kept the glove box in, which was good.
No worries.
You were very correct on that. So
I saved several swear words.
In you did. Fuck, aye. I'd have burnt the place down. Got the dash in, all the plastics, speedo, all that carry on, door cards on, back seats in, carpets all refitted properly. Then I realised I don't have the bottom halves of the dash, which was good. So Paul Glennon is breaking one at the minute, so he has sent them up the road with LaGrange, and I need to go meet John and get them off him. Then I can get the interior buttoned up there. Downpipes are on, exhaust is on, Fogel has been out and made a piece to go between the downpipes where the O2 sensor is and the track slag exhaust. And probably is welding it as we speak and dropping it back this weekend. So shout out to him for coming out at very last minute and sorting that out. Fucking watching him work at it last night was brilliant. Like, he's such a good fabricator. Mm-hmm. Even before he had it all tacked up, everything was a perfect fit. And I was like, I'm not bad at that stuff, but I aspire to be like that. What else was there? I have this written down. That board is butchered. So radiator time. Trying to put a radiator in a VR6 Mark II. The options usually is the Crato one. So Crato VR6 radiator sits the same way in the Mark II as the Mark II one does at that stupid angle.
Yeah,
I obviously fucking hate it. Mm-hmm. Especially when you're doing it through a nice bay. And I was like, right, I'm going to have to cut this bottom panel to put it back in. Then I was like, if I'm going to do that and modify it, I may as well just put the Mark III one in. Mark III one is significantly larger. I cut most of the lower panel away. The only good thing is all it does is attach the radiator at the bottom, and it carries the wee lower valance with the three screws. So I kept the whole underside of it, butchered most of it away, and then welded it in flat. And then the radiator now hangs on the upper panel, because about 6 or 7 years ago when I was modifying the front panel for Matt's radiator, I put these brackets on, and they just happened to fit perfectly. It was the perfect width for my Mark III radiator. Mm-hmm. So that's in, which I'm happy about because of the Spal fans in the back of it. They're neater looking, and it's a bigger radiator, so it should run cool. Built up the front end after that, and then discovered that there are aftermarket indicators in the bumper, which have different plugs than what's on the loom, so I'm going to have to cut those off and redo that. Drilled out the sheet metal for the where the screws go in to hold the headlights, and put rev nuts into them so I can mount them with proper screws and stuff. Just wee bits and pieces as I'm going along. Then I wired up the front end, all the headlights and things like that. Stefan put two front wheel burns in for me because they were loose. He lifted the wheels, which are now powder coated and looking really good. Got tires on them, so shout out to Simon in Lurgan Tire Centre for sorting that. And I have now ridiculous rubber bands on it. So go on 185, 35, 17s. So I had to go narrow because they're a narrow wheel. And there's fuck all brake clearance, like front and back.
Yeah.
The backs, like you could slide an A4 piece of paper between them. Someone said another coat of paint on them, you're fucked.
Yeah.
So got that done, and then I spaced the stub axles then to keep that tight fitment. And then fill out the wheel arch. And then yesterday it turned into a shit show because I offered them up in the front and they didn't fit. So
right.
Full set of brake pads in and offered them up, and I needed a 10 mil spacer. And even when it was aired out, you know, even you drop the front, the wheels suck in.
Yeah.
It still wasn't going in. And I was like, oh, great.
Good times. Mm-hmm.
So I put a half set of pads in on one side, and then that pulled the caliper over a bit and got away with running a 3 mil spacer instead of the 10 mil, and then might have tickled the calipers with the grinder.
Bit of love.
Yes, just a little love tap for about an hour, and we now have clearance. And when I say we have clearance, we have
marginal,
next to no clearance.
Yes.
If the wheel burn ever starts to go, I'm fucked, put it like that.
Yes.
So it's because there's a wide track front end, and that's his Mark III front, which sits wider, yeah, and it's a fucking nightmare. My problem is I need that hub and burn carrier assembly to run the bigger brakes, but I know in my heart of hearts somewhere there is a way to run narrow track with that front end, and I will fucking find it and do it, but I just don't have the time at the minute. And if I do that, that'll give me a right bit, and I can run whatever adapters and clearance I need. So it'll sit a lot better, but for now,
what brakes are you running front?
334 R32 twin pods. So they're big
boys.
And 300s in the back with an R32 caliper. They're off an S4.
That'll be great brakes on that.
It will, yeah.
Yeah.
It'll stop all 174 horsepower.
Yeah. Yeah. Here.
Yeah, yesterday was a bad day. I was fucking freaking out. I was just like, I'm gonna burn this thing down. And then I got settled, got dinner, which helped. And
he was really just hangry.
Yeah.
Which isn't like me. I'm remember usually the, not remember that the bad.
Snickers I had, they were great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, so thanks to everybody who's helped me in some shape or form a lot, because it was a busy 2 weeks. Emotional 2 weeks, and it's going to be another emotional week coming up.
Excellent.
So hopefully by the time this goes out, people will actually, or my car will be fucking ready.
So thoughts and prayers for Connor in the mm-hmm. next week.
There's still a lot to do. A lot to do. Hopefully it'll
be grand.
Hopefully get done.
Yeah, we'll get there.
It needs a good clean. So
do we know anyone who could do that?
I do. I haven't the time to bring it to him, unfortunately. But yeah, it's been stressy. It'll not be sitting, if it goes to the show, it'll not be sitting the way I want to put it like that, because it needs paint in the bay, it needs blah blah blah, it needs properly cleaned and blah blah blah, but it'll get there and it'll fucking motivate me to push on with the rest of it. It'll be good. 20 yard car, you know, you'll see it from across the hall and be like, that looks cool.
And that's the beauty of Dub Shed too. It's a target and it's a push point.
Mm-hmm.
You know, might mean mental breakdowns, but you know, it's a target to build your car to.
Like. Well, that's yeah. it, yeah. It's pushed me on to get it where I needed to be. And then after that, I can just do all the wee silly bits like MOT work, like fit a horn and new, that sort of shit. Like.
Shall we move on then to news?
Yeah.
I don't really have anything apart from the F1. And I'm sure everybody already knows about that. So,
Nigel, do you want to start then?
Okay, the bit of news I had is just a brief thing, and it's basically the Sustainable Energy Authority of Ireland put up posters in petrol stations,
mm-hmm.
or around, they advertise this here, comparing types of transport and how much it costs per 100 kilometres. Mm-hmm. Did you hear this story about a week or so ago?
No.
So these banners up saying that So fuel price comparison for quarter one 2024, and it's from the government, so it'll be absolutely true. So fuel type petrol, 10, I think that's cents, or 10, no, sorry, 10 euro, 10 euro and 4 cents per 100 kilometres. Diesel, 8.95, electric, 3.18.
Mm-hmm.
So you look at that, you think, wow.
Big savings.
Electric's big savings. But then if you go into the fine print, you look down, and that's based on 90% of, what was it? Sorry, 2 seconds here. I'll have to edit this, sorry.
Well, what I was going to say was you've...
Aye, sorry. Blending rate of charging, 90% at home and 10% public charging, fast and higher powered charging rate. Now, that means they're depending on you charging 90% at home.
So so they're not...
But they're putting them up at stations.
Yeah.
So it's not the true story. We're charging a charging station is significantly more than
that. Are you trying to say they're not factoring the cost of charging at home into that cost?
They're not factoring the fact that I think statistically more people charge at the...
Oh, on the road sort of thing?
Which is more expensive. And the fact it's being advertised at one of the charging points.
Yeah.
So it's reflecting 90% at home and 10. So it's basically telling lies.
I say charge here.
And then somebody worked it out, basically, that it works out at 12 euro per 100 kilometres when it's put into...
If you do it at full public fast charging points. Yeah. Are we shocked?
No.
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 Wonder what cars they used for the diesel and petrol comparisons?
I don't know, but it's probably... It'll be a thorough investigation if that's anything to go by.
I'm sure.
Sorry if that didn't come across correctly.
No, you're good.
Generally...
I'm not surprised.
You know.
I can't say I'm surprised at all. My first bit of news, and really my main and only bit of news, is the return of the Dorito. So,
when I said it hasn't gone away, you know,
not as good as the crisp.
Tangy cheese for the win.
So,
no, chili heat wave.
See, I got a bag of tangy cheese there last week, and I haven't bought Doritos in ages, but they were an offer in the place. Like, chili heat wave's good, but see, when you need a good tangy cheese,
I've never had them before.
The door's there, Connor.
I like what I like.
They don't have chili heat wave in America. But the bag for the cheese ones in America, I think they're like nacho cheese, is the same colour as the chili heat wave ones here. And I could fool you about myself. You could buy the wrong ones by mistake.
That's like them heathens walker that make salt and vinegar green.
Aye, the other way around.
Instead of blue.
I used to confuse the fuck out of me when I was younger.
Yeah.
And as you can see... wasn't like I didn't eat them anyway.
Anyway, on to snacks and crisps, Connor. Keep talking.
So it's more than 10 years since the RX-8 was discontinued, and Mazda have released the RX-9 concept. So they had another concept released maybe 3 or 4 years ago, and this looks like it's going to be based very much on that. So it is a traditional sleek sports car design so far, because you know what the concepts are like.
Mm-hmm.
And the sleek design follows Mazda's Kudo design language, roughly translates as fluid lines. And if you look this thing up, it's beautiful. Like, it's really, really nice. Suggested to be 370 horsepower, so 35 more than the Supra, which this is probably what it's aimed at.
Mm.
And weighs 1450 kilos, so 50 kilos lighter than the Supra. And most likely coming out sometime next year, 2025. So it's the return of the Wankel, but in a big sad kind of way, because the dual rotor petrol engine is actually just a generator to charge some batteries.
Yeah.
Wah.
That's right. This is an EV with a range extender.
It's a range extender, yeah.
Yep. So as of 2021, Mazda filed a patent for electrified rotary engine, cries in Japanese. And it's hilariously the
patent. You know, rightly, they'll be getting ripped straight out by the tuners.
Oh, yeah. Oh, 100%. And hilariously, they have patented it because people weren't exactly falling over themselves to copy the rotary the first time around, were they? Like, so it'll be a good-looking car, and disappointingly, it'll be electric. But
yeah.
Here, shout out to Japanese car manufacturers.
Still doing something.
Still holding on to the internal combustion engine.
Mm-hmm.
And they were...
I'm making nice cars.
They were under scrutiny last year a lot from a lot of manufacturers. And look who done a massive U-turn in the last couple of months. All the European manufacturers.
Mm-hmm. Yep, all big time. Because they've been allowed to now.
Because of the common sense.
So yeah, the Toyota and like all the Japanese ones are making some really nice looking sports cars at the minute, which, but like we talked about with the GR as well, like, you know, it's good to see them actually sticking with tradition, which is nice.
But it looks like Volkswagen are, they're just...
Fuck yous, aye.
Yeah. they've backed themselves up at the street. Just, it'll be interesting what way they'll come out of it.
Mm-hmm. That's the problem. Like we talked before, like all these manufacturers have, they're looking 7-8 years down the road. They've been looking at this change for the last 6-7 years. They're not going to do a U-turn now, or they can't.
Yeah,
I think you said in the last episode, there's a lot of manufacturers go to the wall because they're committed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
because they can't just plan for next month. They have to plan for 5 years ahead.
Yep.
Yeah.
Interesting times.
Shall we take a minute to talk about our sponsor?
Yes.
Studio 10 Detailing.
Yes. So Studio 10 Detailing, located in Ballymena, Northern Ireland.
Sorry, before we move on, a Halloween news story. No. News story?
Yeah. Sorry.
It's just I got sent this today and I thought I'd better mention it. That Freddie Flintoff's not coming back to Top Gear.
Yeah.
Okay, he's doing another series of his Field of Dreams Crick show.
Okay.
He's going back to work. But Harris and Paddy are doing a story, are doing a series. It's like driving adventures or something like that.
Okay.
Is it Top Gear or is it something?
No. But I think it's, you know, the fun road trip thing, like Grand Tour type.
They're going to do something like
that. I think it's in essence something like that there.
Interesting, yeah.
So
that'll be popular, I'm sure.
Yeah.
It'd be interesting to see how just the two of them bounce off each other.
Yeah.
You know the way sometimes it takes three to get crack going sometimes when you're in a group of people?
Yeah. Interesting. That's, it'll be good though.
Aye.
It'll have a good following anyway.
Yeah. Harris is flat out now in the Collecting Cars YouTube channel doing content. Mm-hmm. So I was actually a bit surprised he did. Must have been a golden card. You know.
I would say so, yeah.
Yeah. Dangled.
Is it Babe or?
Babe.
It is now.
So, sorry. Studio 10.
Studio 10. Great lad that he is. Doing a lot of bikes at the minute.
Doing a lot of bikes and doing a lot of show cars. Have you seen what he's had through?
Yeah.
Owen Maguire's Bora.
Yes.
So
it looked brand new.
Mm-hmm.
Gathan's Golf R, shiny pennies all around.
Yeah.
Matt's Porsche
is 997. But
he was doing a serious amount of work. He was doing a full deluxe package on the detailing.
Mm-hmm.
Plus he was doing, putting a Dundon exhaust on it. Was he putting a Dundon exhaust on it?
What was that on, sorry?
911.
On the 911. I haven't spoke to Matt, so I'm not sure. He could well have had.
Did he put coilovers? Yeah.
New BCs on it as well. Yes.
Funny he had BCs in his own as well.
Robin couldn't talk highly enough about them for the price of them and the performance. He said the BCs were top notch.
It actually goes into, like, as we said before, like Studio 10 Detailing. There's more than just that name. He offers more in mechanical services as well. And
he has the knowledge and expertise, especially on Porsches, but on cars in general. He's
he's well over a decade served as a specialist mechanic.
You know? Yeah.
Aye, so you're getting that. And again, it goes back into, he's been involved with the car scene for so long too. You're getting the experience of someone who knows modifications, knows the cars, knows the processes for fitting the parts and detailing.
And he's a fussy get.
He is, aye.
He's just.
And it shows in his work.
Completely OCD, so it's a quality service you're getting. Mm-hmm.
So, yes, he's very, very busy at the minute, folks, as we're saying, and show season is looming.
Yeah.
Show season actually starts this weekend.
And the big orange thing came out of the sky there in the last couple of days after a week of rain. So get your cars up to him, get it booked in, get it fresh for
bikes.
Summer.
See how many bikes I've seen on the road today and just thought, oh, I wish I was out there.
That's my focus after Dubshed. Test.
I like this plan.
Yes.
So yes, if that sounds like something you can avail of, folks, check them out on Instagram and Facebook, Studio 10 Detailing, or online at studio10car.care.
And he also offers the online training package.
Foundation Pro.
Yep. Get some really good tips and guides on how to look after your investment of the car. Yep.
Cool. Who has YouTubes?
I have.
Go.
First one then is... one I just started actually watching today is Legit Streetcar.
I saw a bit of that. I liked that.
So this is an American guy. I don't know if you've seen this, Nigel, but...
No, I'm just subscribing here now so I can watch it later.
He has some collection of cars. Like, he's a Mercedes Master Tech and...
Legit Street Cars?
Yeah, Car or Cars. Let's see. Yes, that's him.
There we go.
And... Like, he's a Merc Master Tech. He has a few Mercs. He's a twin turbo V12 one, but he has like lots of domestic American stuff and just a very broad range of things. But he bought a Nissan GTR at auction with a gearbox fault, and he basically got it and was like, going to look into this, but I reckon I can fix this with basic tools and new Nissan requirement. And he does, and he just goes through it methodically, and he finds some things out about the car. Like, it was advertised at auction with 64,000 miles. Turns out when he got it, that was kilometers, and it was really 38,000 miles. And he just, very interesting way he processes everything, and he's not an arsehole. Like, knew some of the American YouTubers are real in your face.
Yeah.
He's just decent, down to earth, very watchable, like, and just talks you through everything, which is good.
That's good.
So no, it's a really good channel. I'll definitely watch more of that.
Just when you're talking about American YouTubers, I've noticed now a couple of the big YouTubers in America are following the trend of Tavarnish and Matt Armstrong and Save and Sally buying hit cars and fixing them.
And fixing them, aye.
I think TJ Hunt was doing one and somebody else was doing one.
I can't stand Matt Armstrong.
No,
I know a lot of people like him. He to me is like the American YouTube personality that I don't like, which is the brash in your face, you know.
Yeah.
I just can't warm them.
I find a lot of them very shouty.
Yeah.
Like, I suppose he sort of looks at it like, I have to be entertaining.
Oh yeah, 100%.
If he's just standing there going, right, now we're going to do this and then we're going to do that. That's probably what he's thinking.
Mm-hmm. No, definitely. Like, it's,
I don't like the way he modifies cars.
Oh really?
It's very blingy.
A bit tacky?
Yeah.
Okay, fair enough. I haven't watched enough to know.
So. Yeah, yeah.
Another one on that
topic, sorry, he's rebuilding Marcus Rashford's crashed Rolls Royce Wraith. Missouri edition.
Rashford footballer
from United. So it was a £700,000 car. And he bought it at auction for £190,000 or something like that. And now he's going to rebuild it. And it's had a queer smack.
Mm.
So, that'd expensive. Be interesting. Expensive. But you won't watch that, so sorry.
No, I won't. I nearly want to watch that, but fuck him.
I watch it. If you can set his personality aside that you don't like or whatever, I see it as, you know, like, he had a nearly new M3 in there. I like to watch it as a challenge because you go, how is he going to fix that? And in fairness to him, he goes into detail.
That's the side of it I would like, as in like seeing the behind the curtain of those cars.
Hit the mute button.
Yeah, that's it. that probably would work, to be fair. Another one then is The Humble Mechanic, Charles. Have you been watching that series, Nigel?
I haven't. My brother was telling me about the RS3
fucking
Golf.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
So he had a 2017 Golf R Spectrum Edition, and it got smacked at the rear end. So his friend has a body shop, rebuilds the back end, and he also buys a hit RS3 and is doing the full swap into it. Very, very interesting in how swappable the car is, but then in ways you would imagine would be straightforward. They're totally different.
Yeah, there's a couple of things where you go, oh, that's bound to be the same across the platforms, and it's not, and it's some weird, like the ends of the shifter cables and stuff. It's like random stuff that you're like, why is that different?
On the body of the car. It's just, yeah. It was very, very strange. But him and Paul from Shop DAP, which are fantastic together, like the two of them play off each other very well. But there's another episode out tomorrow morning where he now is starting to modify the car as well. So it's going in a different direction than I thought it would, which is good.
Your man Saving Salvage, he's doing that with Octavia Estate. I think I talked about it there a couple of episodes ago.
I haven't seen it.
Saving Salvage, he's a boy from the south of England.
Somewhere. Oh, sorry, you did, yeah.
And he bought a Salvage Octavia Estate and he bought a wrecked RS3 and he's
building it into it.
But yeah, as you say, there's some aspect bolts straight in, and then I think the wiring's particularly...
Well, on Charles's one, he done the wiring and he reckoned he only had to... He had to repin a lot of stuff, but to actually cut and join was about 8 wires.
All right,
which was impressive. Like, yeah. Another one then, sticking locally, we have Matt Dobbs Media. He's posted out a few pre-Dubshed, just small teaser videos, and he had Dale's Turbo Classic Mini on it, and Kieran Casey's Mark V there seen this morning, so he's dropping me things, which is always good to see. And then lastly is a local name people might know, is John Payden of Payden Concepts, has started YouTube.
So, I did not know this.
The first video he put out, he says he's just sort of testing the waters with it, and he's talking about what he's going to do. He's basically building a Metro 6R4 from a standard Metro and using the underpinnings from a different car, which, I'll not spoil it, but it's an inspired choice.
Yeah.
And in typical John fashion, he's not big into playing himself up. Like, he's been part of the car scene here for fucking, 20 plus years?
Yeah.
Heavily, and has done mental modifications, and yep, there he is.
Payden Concepts.
And he at one point he says, like, I'm not afraid to tackle this. He says, I've done a bit of painting before, I've done a bit of body work before.
And understatement, like, of the century, John.
Like, he's
a legend over here. Like, yeah,
he's just
like, a long time I've been trying to get John on, and he's trying to get him pinned down. He's a fucking nightmare. So
that's brilliant. Good on you, John.
And he has done some absolutely incredible projects.
I loved his Range Rover.
Yes.
Oh,
the Escort as well. And the man is a fucking Escort legend.
So already stop, actually.
I do hope he pushes on with that channel, because it'll be good to see.
Yeah.
He does some fucking unreal work. That's me for YouTube, then.
I'll just blast through a few. I've watched Top Gear channel. Tom Ford was doing a tour of the Porsche Museum with some new additions in the museum. Auto Alex, just content twice a week through Auto Alex channels. He updated his E46 M3 touring build that Reddish Motorsport were doing. He's gone off the deep end. While You're There syndrome has kicked in.
So I'm trying not to do.
Like, he bought a diff that was $3,000, basically. That's the essence of the build, While You're There, you know. They also done a video about cheap Kai car.
The Kai cars. The wee
Kai car challenge. So that involved, what do you call the guys from Australia, modified...
Medi car mods.
Medi car mods. They challenged the bad Kai car for $2,000. So there's a video on that. Also, on a side note, I don't know if I mentioned the last time, but their friends that used to work with it, is it Car Throttle? It's Car Throttle. I was Car Throttle. Edwin and Will, they have left, and they have started up
Top
Dead Center. So,
which is good, because I don't like Autowallocks, but
yeah, they're putting out content. They're working on 911. They've recently bought a
hit one. Was it a crashed one?
No, it was a vandalized.
That's what it was.
Burnt one. So they're a bit sort of. They're not mechanics, put it that way. So it's fun to watch them. They took it to, I forget the poor specialist that Alex uses, and they got it assessed and what it might cost to fix and stuff, and then they sort of got it fixed themselves through Auto Spark and different bits and bobs. So, yeah. Good to flick on them channels. Just Box have updated the 86 build, so it's in the final stages of paint, and I don't think it'll too many more videos.
I was going to say, that thing must be nearly ready by now then, if that's the
case. It's ready by now, because I think
he'd done an
update video, I think, at the end of last year, that he had such a backlog of stuff. I think that car's been built for a while now, to be honest with you. I mentioned Matt Armstrong's video about the Rolls Royce, but the one that I was watching last week was Harry's Garage, and he'd done a Spanish road trip from Barcelona Airport down to Benidorm, ferry across to Mallorca, and then a week road trip round
and back
again. But he didn't drive down to Barcelona. This is Harry Metcalf. Is it Metcalf? This Metcalf, isn't it? The editor or the owner of Evo magazine. So he got his cars transported down a lorry.
As you do.
So he got his Lambo, what was it? Or the Countach SV, his Jaguar Project 7, and his friend bought a 911 convertible, an old school 964. And he was running through the costs of it and comparing it versus
driving,
fuel cost, wear and tear in the car. And it was $9,000 for the lorry. And I think he worked it out. It was £1,600 if he had done the car each. Because there's a customs charge or something now in the Europe.
Right.
I don't know what that's about. I don't think if you're driving in, but if you get transported in, there's a customs charge or something like that there. But I think he justified it in his own head because there are classics and all it's the rest of it. He says the best way is six people. The transporter holds six cars. So if you get six cars, it's going to cost you $10,000. It'll make it a very cheap-ish way to get it into Spain, and then you can go and enjoy the roads.
And is that the same back then?
I think it was $9,000 total.
Oh, right. Well, that's,
I think it was. Don't quote me. But no, they just ran a few roads in Benidorm, and I couldn't believe the roads that were behind Benidorm on the hills. Beautiful roads. And then, of course, Mallorca is Mallorca.
Good weather as well.
Yeah.
Or a lot better than the
man is living the dream. Living the dream.
Funny, Practical Classics had an article last month about, you know, just kind of it was a funny thing, but it was kind of a factual thing as well of, is it cheaper to drive on your holiday to Europe or to fly? Obviously, they're in England, so it's slightly different than coming from here, but I think they bought a cheap 7 Series or something, family of four, all the luggage, drove to the south of France. I think it worked out marginally dearer than flying, but... not much. And he said, what an experience to do it. And the kids loved it, and you can put all the luggage that you want, no excess baggage charges, bring everything with you.
His justification for too, one of the various reasons he said was, I want to remember the road trip for the good roads, not for the 2 days of driving down boring motorways through France. And the other thing is, there's a load of toll bridges or toll motorways down France and Spain now as well.
But if you were going to do something like that, that the point is that the drive is part of the holiday.
Yeah.
You know, the journey.
I remember talking to Niall with a green jelly about going to Wothersea, and he was saying the drive was just brutal across.
Yeah, it's just boring.
Yeah.
But that's if you have an end target to get to. You need to get here in 2 days, so you just have to blast autobahns.
Yeah.
Whereas if you made the drive part of the holiday,
that's different.
I think I'd have to break down a big drive like that, just stop off and go in somewhere for a day or something, just to, so you're not driving continually.
As Lee says, make it part of your holiday, like a stop off points.
Yeah. That's my YouTubes.
Cool. Shall I do my topic now then?
Yeah,
absolutely.
You ready? So some of you may remember, it was probably about 2 months ago now, that I did a topic about some of the history of the Ulster Grand Prix and the circuit at Dundrod. And I was talking about the ill-fated attempt to run the Tourist Trophy car races there. So I said then that I would do another episode about the bike racing. And I have this class book that I've had for years, called Days of Thunder, about the history of the Ulster Grand Prix. Now, this actually only runs up until 2004, but there's some amazing photos and stuff in it. I think I got it in a charity shop, but when you look in it, there's all these stamps in it saying property of Cork City Library. So sorry to Cork City Library. I have your book. You're not getting it back. So I was looking into it, I've been researching it and stuff, and I thought I would do, as I said, I would do one episode on the cars and one on the bikes. Turns out there's a lot of history with the bikes. So actually, I'm going to split the bike part into two. So today is part one of the bikes, and it takes us actually not about the racing in Dundrod, but the Ulster Grand Prix before it was at Dundrod.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully you'll find it interesting. The reason that I had to split it into two because was I found so many things in the pre-Dundrod days that I've personally found interesting. I'm sure there's one or two history nerds out there who might enjoy it as well. So here we go. The 60-mile motorcycle road race, the main attraction of the 1921 Ballydrain Sports Meeting, had brought the day's events to a successful finish. As the crowds dispersed, three men remained, deep in earnest conversation. As they talked, a plan began to take shape that would lay the foundations for the future of motorcycle racing in Ireland. The three men were Jimmy Shaw, Billy Chambers and George Bowman. All three had a vested interest in promoting motorcycling. Shaw and Chambers were both leading riders in the fledgling sport, and all three men were dealers selling motorbikes to the public. Shaw was a distributor for Norton, Chambers for AJS and BSA, and Bowman for Scott Machinery. Prior to 1922, racing was held on roads that were not officially closed. The Ballydrain 60 and Temple 50 were examples of such events where...
Ballydrain 60?
The Ballydrain 60.
That's local to me.
Is that to you, is it?
Quote, the cooperation of the authorities was invited and granted in each instance. So it was a kind of probably a handshake with the local authorities to say,
handshake with the
we're gonna have a wee race here, is that all right?
Yeah. Look away now.
But in May 1922, the Northern Irish government followed the lead of their Manx counterparts and added the Road Races Act to the statute books. In doing so, they invested local authorities for the first time with the power to close public roads for the purpose of car and motorbike racing. The government had been quick to realise the potential tourist attraction that spectacular race meetings could provide, and the Ulster Motorcycle Club were not slow to embrace the thinking of Shaw, Chambers and Bowman. They were ambitious in their planning, and it was agreed they would organise and run a race to be known as the Ulster Grand Prix. The race would be run on a handicap basis over 7 laps of the 20.5-mile cloddy circuit, a total race distance of 143.5 miles. Initially, it was envisaged that the meeting would comprise two separate races, bikes in the morning and another race for cars in the afternoon. When the 70 starters lined up on the road at Lone End School for the start of the first Ulster Grand Prix on Saturday the 14th of October 1922, the entry was for motorcycles only. On that autumn afternoon, under a heavy grey sky, the most important chapter in the history of Irish motorsport began. Debatable, but...
That's what they're calling it.
That's what we're saying. On the stroke of 1 o'clock, Jay Brown, riding a 3-horsepower Ivy, set off towards Cloddy Corner. The new unique challenge of the Cloddy Circuit lay in its flat-out nature. Not only did it offer a number of straights of 2 or 3 miles among twisting corners, but the ultimate test of machine reliability, a 7-mile straight between Muckamore Corner, past the start-finish line at Lone Ends, and on to the right turn at Cloddy Corner.
I used to work up there.
On the 7-mile straight?
Yeah.
And it really is.
It is, aye. Yep.
Straight.
It's seven so unusual straight. For this country. Like, Americans will be going, and what? But it is definitely weird for us. The race distance was considerably shorter than the Isle of Man TT and French and Belgian Grand Prix, which, unlike the Ulster, were scratch events, meaning a mass start. The organisers believed that a handicap event over a shorter distance would give local riders a chance of competing alongside star names, who it was hoped would make the trip across the Irish Sea. In a week leading up to the race, the Cloddy Circuit was a hive of activity. Volunteers busied themselves with the tasks of erecting a grandstand and scoreboard at the start-finish line and placing mile markers and corner boards along the circuit, while the sight of competitors engaged in unofficial practice became a common sight for local residents. Norton team rider Graham Walker recalls his experience. The roads were to be closed for the race, but they were wide open for practice, to an amazing assortment of wheeled vehicles and a variety of livestock, ranging from herds of cows, dogs, pigs and chickens as additional hazards.
Always good.
It's just Northern Ireland things, isn't it?
That's dinner sorted then.
Walker's teammate, Hubert Hassel, took a more unhurried approach. There was no official time for practicing in those days. We just went out any time we liked and had a ride around. We used to go flat out on the open stretches and then trickle through the villages, often stopping for a Guinness.
As you do.
Race day dawned and marshals tried valiantly to impose some semblance of order on the 40,000 spectators who had turned up to line the course. Graham Walker commented, "It seemed as though the whole population of Ireland was on the move. On foot, on bicycles, jaunting cars, on horseback, in cabs and cars, thousands of grinning, cheering souls were winding their way to the course." Jimmy Shaw and Graham Walker were both in the long lists of retirements from the first Grand Prix. Shaw sidelined by a burst tyre, and Walker reduced to a spectator within a matter of yards after shearing the clutch coming off the start line. The task of upholding the Norton team's honour fell to Hubert Hassel on his 3-speed, chain-driven Norton. He would need all of its maximum 80 miles per hour, as well as a bit of luck and innovation to do so. In order to waterproof the forward-facing magneto, Hassel had tied his wife's bathing cap around it. And with only minutes to go to the start, it was discovered all four gearbox securing nuts on Hassel's bike were loose. It had been stored overnight in an open garage and possibly sabotaged.
That or it's just a British motorbike and they all fall apart.
Well, it could have been either.
Thought you were going to say Italian there.
British bikes are well known for that shit.
He did manage to make the start of the race and go on to win. Walker recalls, "I was gazing up towards Muckamore. Suddenly the banks in the distance seemed to undulate like a big ocean wave coming towards me. It was the crowd jumping to their feet to cheer on Hassel as he roared down towards the finish line." Encouraged by the success of the 1922 meeting, the organisers increased the race distance to 205 miles in 1923, although doubts remained as to whether the machinery of the mostly amateur entrants could withstand 10 laps of the punishing Cloddy Circuit. A grandstand was erected that could hold 2,000 spectators, and on race day, a new 6x8-foot scoreboard was manned by Boy Scouts, showing lap positions as the race progressed. Up-to-date information on the riders' progress was relayed by telephone from Muckamore and Aldergrove to the start-finish line to be posted onto the scoreboard.
It's some difference from now. It's like, funny, isn't it? All digital.
Plans were well advanced to introduce car racing to the Clatty circuit in 1924, but never came to fruition after an unfortunate chain of events that saw the proposed meeting cancelled after a crash in an unofficial practice session. 1924 also saw changes to the format of the motorbike races. Responding to pressure from the major factory teams, the organisers decided to run four separate classes on a scratch start basis alongside a less prestigious sealed handicap. 1926 saw further change, with the 600cc class replaced by a 500 class and separate handicap contests in the four capacity classes replacing the overall sealed handicap. In 1927, for the first time, riders would be rewarded with cash prizes for their efforts. Despite Graham Walker's description of the starting point as dangerously narrow, the organisers decided to adopt mass starts for all classes from 1928 onwards. The economic depression of the late 1920s and early 30s was beginning to affect all aspects of daily life, and the Ulster Grand Prix started to feel the pinch too. Despite a new governor's trophy with a cash prize of £50 compared to the £12 prize for each class winner being offered, numbers of entries fell in 1930 and 31, and then to a new low of 40 entries overall in 1932. In 1935, the Ulster was designated as Grand Prix d'Europe for the first time, and this elevated status helped to turn the tide on declining entries and would prove to be the biggest day since the event had begun, attracting some of Europe's finest riders.
It's funny how you can rebrand something and it just comes back to life, yeah.
Just on the topic of communicating, you know, by telegram, stuff like that, I remember going to the rallies in the 80s and 90s before mobile phones.
Mm-hmm.
And you went to the odd stage, and there used to be a married couple who done like a page, and it was basically the leaderboard, top 10, and then a comment on what's happened. And they would have done a report, rally report, every few stages. And if you landed at the stage, you might have seen them there, and they'd be handing them out, basically. Yeah. That's how you kept up with, whereas now everything's just instant on your phone.
Yeah.
Aye.
That's how you used to. Or
that's class.
The other way I found out is when you went to a service park, you found out they might have been there too, handing out the sheets.
But if you were standing on the side of the road waiting, you probably weren't going to see
her. Going fast.
Aye.
In 1938, motorcycling magazine writers complained that the organisation of the Ulster seems to be getting more casual and lackadaisical each year. This is particularly noticeable as soon as the winners of the classes have finished. People swarm around the pits and saunter up the road, apparently oblivious of the fact that serious racing is still in progress. It must be disconcerting to those riders who have to dice past the stands with another lap to do, and it looks horribly dangerous. Plans were made to improve the situation for the 1939 race, but then the future of the whole event was thrown into doubt due to shortfall in finances, difficulties in securing insurance, and a split in the ranks of the organisers of the Ulster Motorcycle Club. Any of that sound familiar? In June, after an emergency meeting of the Motorcycle Club, some of the committee members resigned and were replaced by men who were determined that, come hell or high water, the Ulster Grand Prix would run. The world had never been in a more uncertain place, but with the spectre of war looming, on the 19th of August, riders and their machines lined up for what would be the last race on the old 20.5-mile Clatty circuit. Pre-race reports focused on the sporting challenge of the German DKW riders. Belfast Newsletter reported, "Prestige in international racing is a matter of considerable importance to the Nazi and fascist governments, and their nationals, along with the machines they ride, will have been prepared with great thoroughness. There will be no fitter men on the course today than Fleischmann and Wunsch of Germany and Serafini of Italy." Fleischmann and Wunsch had been given special leave from compulsory military training to make their Ulster bid for Nazi glory. And for a fleeting moment, it seemed as if the German threat was going to live up to the press hype, with the two DKWs leading away from the line. With no Norton team entry due to the factory's commitment to meeting production levels required by the War Department, it was left to the Velocette riders to respond to the challenge. They duly did, with the newsletter headline the next morning reading, "Woods wins from Nazis, ding-dong battle in 350cc class."
Ding-dong, old chap.
Despite a valiant effort by local rider Walter Rusk on his supercharged AJS, the Italian rider Serafini did win the 500cc class, but Rusk set a new lap record, the first time a lap of 100 miles per hour had been achieved in a motorcycle Grand Prix. It was to be his last race. 2 weeks later, the world went to war, and when racing returned to Ulster, there would be gaps left on the grid by men like Walter Rusk and Wal Handley, who were both killed in the war.
As I was going to say, a lot of that would have been the last race, obviously, because a lot of them would have been killed off.
It's
mad. They probably didn't know what was ahead of them.
Racing returned to a radically altered Clady circuit in 1946. During the war years, runways at the military airfield at Aldergrove had been extended and a substantial section of the road now lay within the airport boundary. The 1946 meeting was not an Ulster Grand Prix, as international racing didn't resume until the following year, but the road race was a beginning of something resembling normality after the austerity of the war, a celebration of the living, and a tribute to those who had not survived. After the mass start in classes, a flag-draped motorcycle on which rested a helmet and goggles was symbolic of an entry without a rider. As the bike was pushed past the grandstand by the race secretary, the names of the dead were spoken over the PA system. In order to even run the race in the first place, the organisers had had to overcome a major shortage of fuel and tyres. Pool petrol, in place of the higher octane pre-war petrol-benzol mix, reduced speeds, but was an adequate replacement. In the absence of proper racing rubber, most competitors made do with synthetic tyres, but their shortcomings soon became obvious, with chunks of synthetic rubber flying off disintegrating tyres.
It'd be nice when you're doing 70, 80 on those old bikes down those roads.
Yeah, really reassuring.
Mm-hmm.
In 1947, international racing returned to Ulster in glorious sunshine. In 1948, the Ulster Grand Prix was accorded the distinction of Grand Prix de Europe for the second time, but the meeting was dampened by torrential rain and gusts of wind almost blew the scoreboard away. And if you've ever been up, but it's not exactly at Dundrod, but it's close.
You're not running away from it anytime
soon. No, it's very exposed.
The format for the Grand Prix changed once again in 1951, with the race programme stretching over 2 days for the first time. But before racing proper had even begun, tragedy had struck. Italian riders Enrico Lorenzetti, Gianni Leone and Sante Germani, all Moto Guzzi team members, had set off on an unofficial practice lap on the Wednesday before the race weekend. When two of the riders stopped to change bikes, the other, Leone, had gone on unaware. Perhaps returning to look for the others, he was spotted coming back towards them. In the misty conditions, they moved to the left, but Germani, perhaps confused by a rider coming towards him on the wrong side of the road, bearing in mind they're Italians, steered to the right and the two collided, killing both.
Nice.
And same team.
Yeah. The 1952 Ulster Grand Prix brought to an end a historic chapter in the history of motorbike racing. In the memory of many, Clady still echoes to the sound of Nortons and Moto Guzzis. But the noise of racing engines has not been heard at the Clady circuit for over 70 years. In the years ahead, new heroes would emerge on the twisty and testing roads of the Ulster Grand Prix's new home at Dundrod. Mm. And I'll tell you about that next time.
To be continued.
Very good, thank you very much.
No problem.
DKW Auto Union.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Audi.
Mm-hmm. Just looking up those supercharged AGSs. I didn't even know they'd done a supercharged AGS that far back. And there's a 350 one there for sale to me, and it's for $22,000. And fuck, they're an ugly bike with a charger. It's obviously old technology, but it's cool that they didn't realise they were using that. Thank you for that.
Yes, I agree. That's a cool book too.
It is, isn't it?
So before we move on, we'll take a second to talk about our other sponsor.
We should. So here on Reload Podcast, you'll hear us talk a lot about older cars that need work, but newer cars need work too, and that's where Motorfix come in. Located just off the M50 in Clondalkin, Motorfix are committed to providing you with a world-class service with the backing of a family-owned business. Specialists in all types of vehicles, let their friendly, experienced mechanics handle the stress of everything from routine services to diagnostics to major engine work. With investment in the highest quality facilities, tools and technicians, Motorfix aim to get you back to your day as soon as possible. So if you're looking for an honest, quality and trustworthy service for your vehicle, look no further than Motorfix Dublin. Check out motorfix.ie online or call 01457 8687. Don't forget to add the 353 dial code if you're calling from outside of Ireland. You can also follow them for updates on Facebook, Instagram, or TikTok by searching motorfix.ie.
And we'll just drop that in.
Happy days.
There we go. Questions in?
Yes, let's do questions, please.
Oh, yes.
So, right, we have a few here.
I'm sure there'll be nobody taking the piss out of us as usual.
No, definitely not. There never is.
No.
Okay. First of all, Eamon McGarry. Eamon says, Connor, how much do you hate cars right now? I think we've covered that, but very much so.
Moving on swiftly.
Yes, that's definitely a dig. Jake_slowup. I'll start a good argument. Who's the best driver? You?
Well, Connor's a rally driver. In your past.
Yeah. What did it? I rallied a race single-seater go-car buggies. I think I was that competitively. Never done much in bikes, but that was all just fun pastime stuff. But
you've had go-kart racing before, haven't you?
I have, yeah.
I beat you at that, didn't I?
Did you?
Yeah.
I can't remember.
I won that night, yeah.
So when I was fat? I'm still fat.
I'm hardly skinny, Connor. I think we need a head-to-head.
I think it doesn't matter what
real
I
challenge.
What you put me in. I'm just ultra competitive.
That's what I was going to say. I'd be scared to race you. Mm-hmm.
That's the problem.
We'd both burn up. You trying, yeah.
That's good fun.
And I would just come from the back to win.
I'd
once you
Nigel
two take each other out.
Like Mario Kart, just
yeah, we've done a few go-kart sessions before. You're not really fussed only, aren't you not?
I'm not very good at it, that's my...
No. Well, that takes you out of the contention. It's either me or Nigel then.
Well, I'm not good at driving a go-kart. I'm good at driving a car.
I love go-karting, but it isn't an equal playing field. Weight is a big issue.
Yeah, it is, aye.
And that's what frustrates me about go-karting.
We should ballast them.
Yeah.
I like this. CM Auto Detailing. Is there an award for best paint? If so, is it judged on colour or minimum swirls? We don't do any awards like that at Dubshed.
Top 40, I think.
I think if I was going to judge best paint, it would be a combination of everything. It would be like the finish on it, obviously, how well it's painted, how well it's finished.
And prepared for the show.
Yeah, prep, even the underbody, like the underprep of the paint and stuff as well. Like you'd want somebody who knows what they're doing with painting, which is not me, to look at it properly. There's some fussy people out there with paint. Richie Brown being one of them is a very good one for spotting paint defects. But yeah, we don't really do awards like that.
I think we used to. We had like engine bay, interior,
best wheels, that kind of thing.
There were sometimes sponsored prizes that a sponsor would do.
Like sponsor's choices.
Best wheels and stuff.
I think
the prize giving took that too long.
Mm. That's the problem.
Just sort of simplified it.
The show's that big now as well. GLH Troy says, what are your top three bucket list car shows or events to attend any country?
I really want to go to Racism in Poland.
Racism does look good.
Alt Race, it's called now.
Sorry.
That's right, actually.
I really want to go to it.
I think it would be good.
I would like to go to Auto Salon Tokyo.
That would be cool. I'd say that would be an experience.
SEMA?
I'd like to do SEMA, just for the experience of it. I think it's a long...
I've done most of the British and Irish shows. Like, just a pity Worthy.
Was the pinnacle.
Yeah, and it's gone now.
Yeah. Did you do it?
Never.
No.
I'll do it next year.
Yeah.
Helen.
And COVID.
Helen, Alpine, Wilkes-Barre in Georgia. Like, that's definitely one for me. I know we've been, but like...
That's a good alternative. And I hope they can maintain it without the dickhead factor ruining it for them, like, you know.
Mm-hmm. Oh, there's Fogel phoning me about my exhaust. You'll have to wait.
I'd like to go to Formula One.
Or a race.
Maybe Spa. It looks pretty good.
Funny, I was talking to a fella I play football with occasionally, and his son's obsessed with F1.
Mm.
And they done the Spa. I think they got a gold or silver ticket or something like that there.
Yeah.
And fantastic event. You know, you have all the races during the day, but then when the race finishes, it's one of the few circuits that let you walk onto the track after and all. He's like, he isn't overly into Formula One. His son's obsessed, but he says it was absolutely fantastic.
Yeah. I'd like to go.
They done it through a travel company, I think.
I wouldn't even mind which one. I don't know if... Well, I'd probably quite like to go to Monaco just for the experience, but Connor would hate it. But I'd like to just go and hear the noise in real life and stuff.
Nah, it wouldn't be my thing.
Yeah.
Definitely not. Oh, I just put my phone away there and need it for the questions.
I would like to go to one of the shows. What's the German... A bunch of guys that do the shows
on the back of where they're seen now. What do you call them? Move on. There's a crowd do shows now every so often in Germany.
Oh, I can't remember the name of them, but
you know what I'm talking about?
Is it XS Nights or something?
XS Nights. Yeah. They apparently do fantastic some really events. Good
shows, yeah.
Real top class stuff.
Quite a lot of the shows that I would like to go to don't exist anymore.
Yeah, it's a pity.
I didn't say any decade or anything, you just said any country.
Any country.
One thing.
Can we go back in time?
That's a damn shame. Like, if you see VW International back at the turn of the millennium there, it was unreal for Volkswagen nerds. It was just mental.
Edition?
Funny. No. Oh. VW International.
Oh, I never got that.
It was crazy.
I would like to have gone to it. I would have liked to have gone to, obviously, H2O. I'd like to have gone to that one in Poland you guys all went to before it
funny, got I was thinking about that one at present. VAG event. It used to be, it wasn't an open show, but we get invited by Polish guys from over here. Said, oh, you must come. And they took over like abutments on the outskirts of Poznan. I'll say outskirts, it was an hour drive. But just top quality cars, and everybody was super friendly.
Yeah.
Like, it was broken English talking to people, but they were thrilled that they wanted to talk about the car and all the rest of it, and just the standard of cars, and it was great.
Yeah.
And beer was £1 a pint.
That's also good.
That was excellent.
Oscar, this is a hard one to say, so I'll just say what it's supposed to say, is VW is Honda eater. He says, is it me or dual rounds the new smoked E-codes for Mark 3s? They're everywhere, including my car. So for anyone that doesn't speak American, Mark 3 E-codes is the...
Quads?
No, right. The E-codes is the European headlights that they fit, because their headlights are different than ours.
Oh, right,
okay. And they were very popular, but now everybody's going dual rounds. Yeah, dual rounds.
What was the company that made the twin headlights for the Mark III?
Oh, there's so many. There's Moretti's, there's Hella.
I think I'm ready. I just think fantastic beer.
That's it, yeah. It is a fantastic beer. Yeah, the dual rounds are a big thing for Mark III's, the Milton kits and things like that. That sort of 90s spec is back big style.
I think it depends on the car. I like them on some cars, I don't like them on other cars.
Okay, yeah, it has to work with everything. Yeah. Like. His Mark III is coming together very well, which is nice. Stiley Riley, any car in particular you're looking forward to seeing / unveiling at Dubshed?
Connors Mark II.
Top of the list.
Fuck, I hope you aren't too excited.
Dave from Drift Games unveiling his Lambo build.
Somebody told me they were doing a Lambo or something, yeah.
What else?
There's a few I see in the entry list, and I'm actually afraid to say them out because I don't want to, in case people are keeping it secret or something, is the only problem.
Abby Higgins, well, good to see her car. I've been following her build for the last while.
That's the 7 series? No, 8 series? The old 8 series? 7's four door, 8's the coupe. Yep.
Yeah.
Aye. So we'll revisit that one, Kieran, and after Dubshed.
Yeah.
And we'll catch up with that one. He says, also, first time going to Dubshed this year. Any suggestions on good fast food / restaurants around Lisburn?
Oh, there's loads.
Poutines.
Poutines is hard to beat.
Yeah, it's very much like a lot of food. It's like quantity over quality, but it's good feed still.
I would say quality's still pretty really good. Okay,
but it's not like a high-end restaurant is what I mean, you know. Well,
that whole area like around...
That whole complex at the cinema.
The cinema, everywhere's pretty decent.
Anything you want in there. Del Toro have moved in there now, which is like a proper steakhouse. Slim Chickens there, and it's really nice.
Is Slim Chickens there now?
No, it's the other one.
Oh, the Canadian one?
Mary...
Yeah. Something like that MB. One. MB Chicken.
Yeah.
There's probably your best bet. Michael Scullin _, how stressed are you all for Dubshed now?
Next question.
As previously discussed.
I'm not so much stressing over the show, I'm stressing over this fucking golf.
There's been a lot of panic this last week.
That's good.
But
panic means progress.
It'll be fine.
It's the GTNI fucking, what's the motto?
Ethos?
Aye.
DFR?
It'll be fine. We need to stay positive.
Stay positive. Believe in the process.
As I said, that meme with the wee dog standing in front of the fire.
Everything's on fire.
Yeah, it's fine.
Keith 5D, where did all the 6x9 speakers go? Onto parcel shelves of 90s hot hatches?
In the bin. Manufacturers have improved their OEM stereo systems.
Yeah.
And audio, I would say it's hard now to make a living at audio equipment.
He says, does anybody still make them? I would say the audio game now has went, you're either going really high end.
Yeah.
Or keeping what you have, or wee add-ons here and there. Because the standard audio stuff now is unreal.
Saying that, the Mark V GTI speakers, they are crap.
Really? The but Mark IV stuff's pretty good.
The Mark VII, fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Don't know what the Mark VI is like, but I remember the speakers in the Mark V. Just...
You think there's 10 years difference between them?
Yeah, that's true. But you, as you say, the Mark IV was fine. Did they cheap out in the audio in the Mark V? I don't know.
Probably.
Yeah, probably did. If they didn't let the Mark V, dangerous with it on the Mark VI.
That's what I was going to say. The Mark VI is fucking something out of a Fiesta. There we go. Fogel_Riley26, the man who was phoning me there about 2 minutes ago. Has anyone else not touched their car yet for Dubshed? No. That's, I can't attest to that.
I will take the club sword over, it needs washed.
No, that's not too bad.
Big job on.
Superb's MOT'd, so I'm good to go.
Yeah. No poke, no love, all the way from Canada. It says body work is the devil. He's doing work on his caddy.
I feel you.
He's building a caddy pickup and is a lot of work on it at the moment. That's going to be a cool. He's a great fabricator and like some of the stuff he's done custom for his class. And lastly then, he says, why are we all not importing... Oh, sorry, read out who it was.
Yes.
Yeah.
VW Dunner_DB Dealies says, why are we all not importing Mark 1s from South Africa, seeing as they're the same age as a Mark 4?
Because they're Mark 5 Mark 1s.
They're not the same.
Yeah.
Or, sorry, they're 5-door Mark 1s.
I think that's the killer. If there were 3-doors.
If they're 3-door, they would be running out of them in South Africa.
Yeah, so like for...
But they have the modern dashes and stuff in them.
Some do, some don't, but you can also retrofit them.
I like that they have that body line at the back, the same as the Jetta that the Mark 1s don't have. I actually like it.
Aye. So, for anyone who doesn't know what the fuck we're talking about, Mark 1 Golfs were made up until like 01, I think it was, in South Africa. But they were known as City Golfs, and they got like updated bumpers and...
Fuel injection
engines. And they have a massive following over there. But they're all 5-doors, as you say, Nigel. Which is a lot of those body panels is why you can still get Mark 1 body panels. Which is good in that regard.
Good for us.
As Lee has said, on the Mark 1 Jetta, the C-pillar has like a stamped pressing and it looks like a boomerang.
Mm.
And Mark 1 Golfs don't have that, 5-door or 3-door, but the City Golfs do. And that's a real telltale straight away. Later ones of the City Golfs actually came with the Skoda Fabia dash in them.
Yeah.
Which is weird to see.
That is weird.
And it was probably all to do with crash standards because interior pieces and things like that, you know, everything has to be softer and rounder, and like they have a huge, huge following over there.
I'm surprised they're allowed to be produced up to then with the
safety standards
because you're the crumple zones, you're facing them.
Like. Yeah. Well, you're probably less safety standards in those countries. It's like Mexico built Beetles right up to was it maybe 2001?
Oh, aye,
same with the buses and stuff too. But I would say you're right why they're not as popular as they're 3-door, or not 3-doors, they're 5-doors. I would say if there were 3-doors, you would see a lot more of them coming in.
Yeah. That it for questions then?
That's us for questions, folks. Thank you very much.
Happy
just
days.
Just before we finish up, just a reminder, folks. Biggest show of the year coming up. Dubshed. 6th and 7th April. Icon.
So if you're listening to this, it's out in, it'll be 2-3 days away.
Yep. Looking forward to it. Plenty of stuff to be seen and do. And something a bit different this year with drift taxi runs. And we have... BMX battle group coming. They're doing all sorts of display with scooters, bikes, motorbikes, all sorts of carry on, and a few other wee things we've had this year. So
there's always something different every year, which is good. Like
12 to 6 both days. You can buy your tickets online before you go, dubshed.com, or you can pay at the gates. Not a problem if you want to display your car outside, as long as it's German, it can come in, no bother.
And for anybody who has been before or showed a car before or spectated before, the layout will be slightly different this year as well.
So there's one way system this year.
When you're coming in, just sort of pay attention to what's happening. It's not the norm.
Yeah.
So.
And no mucking about on leaving either.
That's it.
You've been warned.
And if you see us, come say hello. And if you see my car, please be sympathetic.
To be fair, I don't think it's any of our listeners who are the dickheads fucking about. So.
Yeah, that's true.
That's true.
If they are, we'll just block them.
We're nervously looking forward to it and we can't wait to put on another good show.
It's always good crack.
Yeah.
That's good to catch up with people.
So thanks everybody for listening and we'll see you on the other side.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If we survive.
Cheers, folks. Bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.